It's time to hit the brakes. Welcome to Swerve South. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Swerve South. I'm Jamie Harker. I'm the director of the Sarah Isom Center for Women and Gender Studies, and I'm here with my co-conspirator, Teresa Starkey.
Hello everyone.
Today we have a special conversation that Teresa had with the band Chocola, who were here for Sarahfest back in September, I believe. But before we lead into that, I just wanted to do a little background on Sarahfest, and since this has really been Teresa's baby, let me turn it over to you. Teresa, what is Sarahfest, and how did Sarahfest come about?
Okay. Actually, Sarahfest has a history even before I started with the Sarah Isom Center. And it was something that was started by Isom faculty. And you'll probably be able to pull the archive for this on for me and expand on it. But started by former Isom faculty, affiliates, and then also very much student-driven. And I believe that that maybe was about a decade ago, if I'm not mistaken, possibly.
I feel like it was in the late 90s, mm-hmm. early 2000s, a little bit before my time even, which is
right.
saying quite a bit.
Right. And so what
it was a one-night band
exactly,
sponsorship.
Exactly. And it was on the square, and businesses opened their door and were supportive. And so really what that moment was this crossing of these boundaries and borders between campus and community. And so again, the idea of being student-driven and thinking what students can do when they're encouraged and want to lead, right? So Sarahfest came out of that, and it actually came out of a conversation that I had with gender studies minors, who we were sitting around one day over the summer having lunch and thinking about the different things that they wanted to see happen. And one was doing some sort of concert, right? And so that's how the wheels started rolling at that moment. I believe it's Charles McElroy and Lexi Wilcoxon were two of the principal students involved in that.
Was Allison at that meeting too?
Allison Combs was at that movie, right? In that moment, right? So that's sort of how that happened. And so what we ended up doing is creating this music festival that lasted for a week. And the reason that we did that is that we had Nico Case come as our headliner and do a benefit concert for us. So we were really lucky to have her while she was out touring already, but made a pit stop in Oxford and put us on her radar. But we decided to expand that timeline.
Because Amy Ray came.
Right.
And so Amy Ray at the beginning, and they couldn't come the same weekend, so we had to fill in the between.
That's exactly right. So we had Amy Ray from the Indigo Girls who had offered to come, who came for Peanuts. And then also, which I love and appreciate, there was this really, I think it's still operating out of Tupelo, but this really small airlines that has tiny planes. And so she flew from Atlanta to Tupelo, and I think the experience was like flying on an airplane that seemed like it was put together with popsicle sticks and rubber bands, right? But she did that, right? Rented a car to be here and did all of that because she's supporting the work that the gender studies programs does, and she's an advocate, right? And so to have her come and do that, and then at the opposite end, as I said, was Nico Case. But the in-between time was also things in which we had people perform on Thacker Mountain Radio, which is a local nonprofit that has authors read, and then also musicians, and so we formed a partnership there. Then we had an art exhibit at the Powerhouse Community Arts Center. We partnered with Living Music Resource, who I'm going to say also had a conversation with Chocola, who is the band that performed for Sarahfest this year for us. So I encourage people not only to listen to our podcast, but to tune in and to watch the Living Music Resource interview that Nancy Mariah Bolish has with the band as well. And I need to point out that it's at this moment where we as a center start developing these community partnerships, not only community partnerships, but campus ones as well. And they're with entities that have this like-minded vision, right? That the arts can be transformative and that we can create these diverse spaces for community building and learning, that these can happen in unexpected ways when you bring people together and you use arts as sort of this medium as a spark for conversation.
Well, I'm going to pause for a minute.
Yeah, because I was
back.
really rolling.
This is your baby.
I was rolling with
I
that.
I like it.
You know?
I just want to pause and mention two things. One, the original Sarahfest concert that happened late 90s, early 2000s, really cool event, but didn't happen again. So it was one of those one-offs, just like the first Pride Parade in the early 90s.
Right.
Was very cool. They had a teach-in, but it wasn't an annual event. And one of the things that we try to do as a center is take those really cool ideas that erupted and turn them into annual events so that it doesn't just become one cool experience that goes away, but becomes part of the fabric of what we do as a center and also part of who we are as a community. So we want to give credit to those first moments and also acknowledge that we've created a structure to keep this going. So we just had our fifth, I believe, Sarahfest.
That's right.
In 2.0 version.
Yeah.
That's showing my age with that. I apologize.
Yes, it is.
But it is, you know, so that's, and that's also, we're coming up on our, I think we just had our fifth Pride Parade.
That's right. And I also feel like it's important when you're saying that we give a shout out to the past, because I believe it's important to acknowledge, and I think this is part of looking at the history of feminism and women's movements as well, right? There's a history there, right? There's a history that we pull from. There are people who've been doing the work before.
Right.
And I feel that for us, we are sort of the torchbearers, right? Like we're just picking up what they started, but we're also sort of reimagining and kind of reinventing, but that spirit is very much still there. And it's still very much the belief that for how I think about it is that it's an amazing thing to consider what happens when you give students a platform to envision, right? A possibility for change. And I think that that's something that we do as a center too, is giving
Absolutely.
Them that. And I think that that's one of the things that's important. So a lot of the things we're doing, right, is we're not only carrying the torch, but it's also very much student driven and envisioned as well.
Yeah, we pretty much take the idea that if a student has an idea, we try our best to make
that's
it happen,
right.
And have them drive that. And that's never steered us wrong.
That's right.
You know, simply put, Sarahfest is an interdisciplinary arts festival
mm-hmm.
that bridges the gap between community, nonprofits, and the university. It emphasizes women. It mm-hmm. also emphasizes LGBTQ perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
And that first year, when we realized we had a gap between, we tried to fill the whole thing and just about killed ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And probably, honestly, since I helped plan it, but then I stepped out, it was you and Kevin who just about killed yourselves that first year.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did a version of the second year, and we decided to evolve a little bit
to save
our bodies, because there's only three of us.
That's right.
So that we turned it into a kind of semester-long arts festival where we have different events. And we've kept that partnership with Living Music Resource, which I really value. We've kept our partnership with the Powerhouse.
Mm-hmm. And Thacker Mountain Radio. And we've done other partnerships that are equally valuable. Roanoke, the mm-hmm. University Museum, and also our campus partners as well. Right?
Absolutely.
The University Museum is one, and as I said, Living Music Resource, which has also been just a steadfast supporter.
And I don't want to forget Proud Larry's and The Lyric.
Oh, that's right.
Proud Larry's hosted a number of those concerts and continued to.
That's right. Proud Larry's and these local entities, and also the Student Union. Got to give Bradley Baker a shout out, too.
Absolutely. So it's been terrific. So this year's, as usual, was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
But the band Chocola this was your idea to bring them in, the Latinx band from North Carolina.
Right.
And they were terrific. And they did interviews with Nancy.
Mm-hmm.
They had a conversation with you. They did a public concert.
That's right. And performed on Thacker Mountain as well.
So it was great to have them, but we got to have a little conversation with them about their work. So leading into this, we've got Teresa talking with band members from Chocola about their work. So enjoy.
Hi, my name is Teresa Starkey. I'm the Associate Director for the Sarah Isom Center for Women and Gender Studies here at the University of Mississippi. And I'm excited today about my conversation with Chocola, a great band out of Charlotte, North Carolina. They've traveled here to be with us, and they are performing as part of Sarah Fest, the Sarah Isom Center's annual arts and music festival. So I'm going to go ahead and turn things over and ask the band to go ahead and introduce yourselves.
I'm Lisa Ortiz.
Okay. I'm Claudia Ortiz. Okay.
Michael Anderson.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. So.
And we are missing our fourth member, Davey Blackburn.
We'll tell him that he is missed.
Yeah.
And we hope that you come back, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And come back together. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So thinking about being here and, as I said, crossing these borders and boundaries to play, and you're playing and performing pieces from your new album, right, that's also, right, taken from your band name.
Mm-hmm.
So can you talk about the experience of recording this album? How did you get to this point? So let's talk about that a little bit, because that's exciting. And if I'm not wrong, September 1st was your album release,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So congratulations on that.
Thanks.
And so let's talk about that journey, right?
It took a long time. We've been a band for going on 3 years. So the fact that we just released an album, I feel like that's a little long, but it's also, I think, because we put a lot of time into it, mm-hmm, and we were very busy with shows, which is awesome, but this is my first time doing a professional recording, so this is a whole new world, I know, for Claudio too.
Mm-hmm.
So not you, you're a veteran in the music scene. But this is our first time recording, and it was a big learning experience for us. But it was awesome to hear it come to life in a professional way,
yeah,
again, outside of recording in a shed or a storage unit, as
yeah,
we had
yeah.
previously done. And working with the producer and everything, he was such a magician about making things come out.
And, yeah.
But recording in a way that we could all play live was really important, so I'm glad that we captured that. I feel like the music is still true to the live experience, so we're proud of that.
Yeah, I mean, even every step of the way has been a learning process, from the recording, the mixing, the mastering, then going into the release, you know. And we all had different jobs. I particularly have been really kind of fascinated by the way that we've organically sort of like parsed the jobs out to one another. Mm-hmm. So Michael did, he like organized the art for the album. Davey took care of actually getting them pressed on vinyl, and everything with sort of that realm. It took me a second, but I finally figured out most of the hoops to jump through to get mm-hmm. our music released onto the internet, so
yeah.
like on Spotify and stuff
yeah.
like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, even like with this trip down to Mississippi, this is the farthest we've traveled as a band, so it's been a learning process on just getting stuff organized around the trip.
And so can you tell me a little bit about this idea, because it came out in your conversation about... At the very beginning, when you were recording, right, the first, was it your demo? Is that
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're doing that, and it's also sort of like this do-it-yourself, right,
mm-hmm.
kind of ethic. And I have to say, I have to think about my own discipline and where we come from in terms of history, but like the different waves of the women's movement, specifically in terms of the second wave, right, was very much about this kind of do-it-yourself sort of ethic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like creating spaces or mediums, right, to get your work or your art or your writing out there. And it was one of these things, because in terms of thinking about the second wave, is that these spaces or venues aren't there for you. So you
mm-hmm.
have to create them for yourself, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it's like, and it's literally about getting your voice, right, out there in that context. And then I also have to say, too, in terms of thinking about music, it's also a little kind of punk rock, too, right, mm-hmm. where you're doing this mm-hmm. thing and you're recording and doing everything on your own. Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit about that first process as well, right? Like you said, it's a learning process, right?
Yeah.
And then you've moved to this, right?
Yeah. We were definitely, from like previous bands and experiences, just used to being resourceful
yeah.
and just making things happen. Fortunately, Davey had like some of the right equipment to make it work. Davey kind of works with like recording
yeah.
For like isolation in my shed, we kind of made some makeshift like apparatuses and threw
right.
like blankets over them and
yeah.
stuff. And
yeah.
Even with that, it was like a particularly for me, I don't really know that much about recording.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that I've ever personally recorded is just, you know, on a microphone or something, and then it gets lost forever.
Yeah.
You know, I've never really put that much effort into it. But that sort of do-it-yourself process is something that we've all been kind of we're veterans of doing it ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, that's,
I think all creatives have that.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. I'd argue that everyone's creative, but some people acknowledge that about themselves and others don't. But
yeah.
the
right.
ones who do,
yeah.
There's always going to be a point where if you're a creative, you have something in yourself that you want to actualize, whether it's
yeah.
for you or for everybody else, but it's something that usually becomes tangible, right?
Yeah.
Or as if it's a play, it's an experience that happens
yeah.
at this point
yeah.
in time. So if you don't do that, if you don't take the steps to get from the idea in your brain to whatever your creative outlet is, I mean, you have to be do it yourself, you know, like
yeah.
even if we say we're like, oh yeah, we want to like get sign on to Arista's not even around anymore. But you know, say if there's some label, we're like, oh, we want to get on a label and like have them fly us around and do all this other stuff. Well, we have to still make the music for the label to listen to,
right,
to like
right.
say that, you know,
right.
But I think even outside of traditional creative realms, for me personally, a lot of my life has just been, you know, you have curiosity about things and
yeah.
Not to discount, you know, learning from the experiences of others,
yeah.
but more often than not, for me, it gels the most to take the experience from others, but then the experience that I have in trying to make it out, you know,
yeah.
that really solidifies knowledge and gives confidence. So
yeah. Yeah.
I think, you know, whether it's, you know, you look at it and there are tons of bands out there who have already self-produced and all that other
yeah.
stuff. So it's
mm-hmm.
not like this unattainable goal. It's, at some point, it's just a matter of like, all right, let me do some research, find out, and like ask some people about it if you want to do it yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm always a big advocate of at least having an ability to do it yourself, because then you can maintain what it is that's the closest to the ideal that you had in
yeah.
your head.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So if
yeah.
we put out this album ourselves, we worked with a producer, we recorded at CC's studio in Charlotte. It's a wonderful
mm-hmm.
place. If you're ever there,
mm-hmm.
look up Chris Waldorf. He helped us out a lot.
Yeah,
he was someone that we really trusted and knew was really good. So he, like Lisa said, had contributions in there too. But a lot of it was driven by what we were already expecting to hear and what we wanted to hear. And you know, if we didn't take the attitude of at least thinking that we could do it ourselves, then, you know, you put yourself in a position of walking in someplace you've never been before, somebody you've never met, and then they're dictating what
yeah.
you end up with.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
it's just, I think it's just more trying to stay as close as possible to whatever that vision is.
Right.
And
right.
and more often than not, doing it yourself is the way to maintain that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Somebody asked, and often, like me and others will, and I'm sure maybe even this weekend with Nancy. But again, like thinking about like your influences or define your music for us, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought one of the interesting comments that came out in a previous interview was, well, you described yourselves as maybe music for curious people. But I appreciate, right? I think that so I was like, yeah, I think, yeah, talk about that, right? Because it is this idea of like creativity, almost, right, curiosity mm-hmm. too, in terms of what drives us, right? Mm-hmm. Or the idea of like experimentation and putting things together. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that I'm just going to open that up.
Yeah, I just, our sound, I've always said, isn't something so strange that people can't connect to it, yeah. But it is difficult to explain. And usually when you're trying to get somebody excited for a show or to check somebody out, you're describing bands that they are like, yeah, or that sound, they're like, oh, cool, I identify that, so I can get behind it. Whereas that's been a little bit more difficult explaining our sound. Mm-hmm. And so I do think you need to spark that curiosity in order to get somebody interested mm-hmm. in coming out to a show and everything. So definitely I think that label works really well for us. because yeah, that's always a struggle question. And even when I've tried, we've gotten some mm-hmm. great, like the tropical psychedelic sound. Mm-hmm. I laugh explaining that to my coworkers. It wasn't until they watched a video of us that it totally makes sense what you said, because I can't pinpoint what kind of sound you make. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, that's why that question is always difficult for us. Like, what genre are you?
So I'm not going to pretend like we thought about this ahead of time, but when you're talking about our name and smashing it and all that other stuff, I think that... If it isn't a description of who we are, then maybe it's a description of why it's difficult for us to answer that question. Because if you think about like a high five and then just juxtaposed with the energy of smashing it, like mm-hmm. it's such a high energy thing. It's around the world, right?
It's kinetic,
you're,
right?
You're
it's
excited
kind of
to see whomever you have. You're excited about what just happened. And you could be hanging out with somebody who doesn't understand a word that you're saying, and something cool happens, you can high five each other and it's gonna work out. In a weird way, maybe a strange jump, I think that kind of maybe best encapsulates how I feel about what we play. I feel like we're not really trying to, and maybe not even landing on any particular genre or whatever, but we're bringing it together, and the common thing there is that energy of like, hey, let's get together and have a good time, you know, like let's make something awesome.
Make something awesome, and you feel it, right?
Yes.
And then the audience feels it, and it's mm-hmm. awesome. And like you say, there's a kinetic, there's an energy to it, right? A movement and a feeling.
First and foremost, before we can sort of pretend to go out and play the songs that we write for mm-hmm. an audience, it has to be an experience as we're writing it that feels good, and we all recognize it. I don't think we have like a name for it, or if anyone has a name for it, but it's we play a song and it just kind of elevates it makes the energy in the room buzz, and we're like, yeah, that's we all felt that. We're all kind of like surfing that wave, and it's not well, it is intentional. Like, we want to share that when we play, right? But that experience of putting out that sort of and that buzzy energy into the audience, and then them sort of taking that and experiencing it and kind of sending it right back at us, that's my favorite thing about being a musician and performing live. It's like, I'm not very like religious, but mm-hmm. I consider myself to be a little spiritual, mm-hmm. and that sort of interaction with the crowd for me is like the closest thing that I have to like a church service, mm-hmm. And it's just like really special.
Mm-hmm. So talk about your writing experience, right, as writing songs together, or maybe even think about some songwriters whose works, right, or words, right, kind of make it pop for you, or right? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Musically, we all most of the time write together.
Yeah.
And then I'll add lyrics afterwards. There's only been like one or two where I wrote words first, brought it to practice, mm-hmm. and we kind of, which is funny, one of our most popular loved songs, I almost didn't bring it to practice because I thought it sounded too poppy when I was singing it, mm-hmm. but then when I brought it to practice and everybody brought their own element to it, it's one of our favorite songs now, Reina de Mi. Mm-hmm. But with the writing, I know I've said this before, but it really is true for me. I kind of have to force myself to sit down and start writing. It's not something that naturally comes to me. I've never been a journal writer. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't something I was used to doing. So just even the first time, there was kind of like a lot of anger around it, mm-hmm. because I wanted this skill to come naturally, you know, it's something enjoyable. The whole experience should be enjoyable. But I was like, it kind of felt like homework. I was like, mm-hmm. why do I have to do this? Mm-hmm. I didn't sign up for this. And then 2 hours later, you know, I've jotted down all these things and it didn't feel like it came from me, but it was absolutely for me. Like, that's been my experience with writing all these songs, is that even if it wasn't in that moment, later on in life, I'm listening back to it and I needed to hear that mm-hmm. message more mm-hmm. than anybody else. So it's been a very rewarding experience now, as annoyed as I got at the beginning, because it's that pressure of you want to deliver something good, but you're doubting yourself and it comes out in this negative yeah. way. But I think that's the sentiment of the entire album, is realizing those things and being comfortable with yourself and just being okay with the human experience.
Yeah.
As far as like hearing it in other music and it sort of sends mm-hmm. light bulbs, I never, you know, I've played music for most of my life, and Lisa and I have played music together most of our lives because we're siblings. I was never a fan of writing like lyrics mm-hmm. Until I started listening to blues music, and just there was, to be honest, before I listened to the blues, I never really paid attention to the lyrics. I just really kind of nerded out on listening and parsing out like the little pieces of the production and yeah. hearing the bass versus the drums versus the guitar. I remember one of my friends introduced me to the song Death Letter Blues by Sunhouse, and that was for me the first time I realized like how like powerful words along with just playing the music could be. I still don't really like writing lyrics mm-hmm. that much but hearing Lisa sort of process different life experiences through her lyrics has made me come to realize, you know, how we occasionally we tend to sort of like freeze people in time, you know, when we like find out that they're an age, they can be like that age forever. And Lisa's, until this band, kind of was forever just my kid sister. And then I started to listen to the lyrics that she was writing about, and I had this moment where I was like, oh man, my kid sister is actually like a super empowered, just rad woman, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty special.
So I have another quick question, and I know it's warm in the confessional, right? And I've been sharing things about myself, right? And my but let's talk about, you're a veteran, right? That's how Claudio referred to you, right? Veteran
being
of the music
scene. Of the...
Oh, I'm old too.
He's but, definitely a veteran in the...
But thinking about, because you're coming out of Charlotte, North Carolina, right? And so you're like you say, you've been playing music and playing music in different spaces or different sort of, you know, moments or scenes. So talk about that. So how did, I guess this is a question, how'd you find each other, right?
Well, you and I.
I know you're related, so that makes it. So that's kind of, that makes it simple.
They were playing in a band with Davey.
Yeah.
And I had known Davey just from living in Charlotte and playing music for way too long. but you know, Charlotte's a growing town, and we're now, I can say, officially a little city, I think. Mm-hmm. Instead of a big town, there's a lot of stuff to do. It's gotten to the point where you don't necessarily know what the hot thing to do on any particular night is, or if you go downtown and there's a lot of people walking around, it's like you used to be able to say, oh yeah, that's the blah 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 convention, and now you don't know.
Yeah.
Back then, when I first met David, there were only a handful of places that you went for original music and independent artists. So we would play shows together, and we just kind of knew each other from that and going to shows and seeing each other. And we ran into each other one day and just happened to be around the time I hadn't been playing for a while, and I just kind of started fooling around on my own again, contemplating playing. You know, doing the whole full project. And he was like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I'm just floating around, might get into playing some stuff. And he's like, oh, we're doing some stuff. So, yeah, it's kind of worked out from there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's funny, before he came to practice with us, Davey had brought it up. And he was like, yeah, he's a wonderful saxophone player. And we were like, awesome. I don't know, saxophone might be a little heavy-handed for every song. But then once Michael came in to play, it was like, no, you need to play saxophone. It sounds so great.
You're like the Pied Piper coming in. Right? What?
Is that why you guys haven't tried to get me to play guitar in a while?
Listen, we allow freedom, but you're good at what you do.
Well, and that's an interesting thing to think about, too. Like, you're talking about Charlotte sort of evolving, and now you're saying it felt like a town, and now it actually is kind of, it's like a city, and there's, like so much going on, and it's an interesting thing to consider, too, because I've talked with Tyler about this, and then this is something we talked about, Jamie Harker and I, in an earlier recording that we did together, was talking about, I'm from Atlanta, and so I was part of Atlanta at a particular moment that very much like influenced me like aesthetically, mm-hmm. you know, and it was that late 80s, early 90s moment. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, and you don't realize or recognize, I think sometimes, that you're part of like this moment or movement that's happening until you're old, right? And you step back and you realize, like, oh yeah, that's what was happening. There are all these bands that are sort of playing together, and they're intersecting with one another, and it's not only just bands sometimes, but they're also sort of like these other avant-garde scenes, right? That and there's an energy, and you're kind of feeling and bouncing off of each other, right, and coming into points of contact, which can be really kind of exciting. Have you felt that way, right, in terms of thinking about Charlotte, right, at certain points and moving in the orbits that you do?
Definitely. When you bring the music together with the visual artists and the writers, like when all those people find spaces to coexist with each other, I think that's when you get culture, right? That's when you get the good things to do. What I was alluding to earlier in Charlotte, it's like it was... That felt like a much smaller group of people. So it was really easy, in a sense, to know where to go know that when you went to this place, you're going to run into. But I lived in a house, one of the houses I lived in that was notorious for sharing, you know, having roommates. We had four of us there over the course of that house, rented for about 10 years, and people kind of rotated in and out. Yeah. But there was always a couple of musicians. There's always like a handful of painters living there. We had an architecture grad, like woodworker, living there. So it was like, it was just kind of second nature to just stay around those people because they were kind of the most interesting ones mm-hmm. that you could find out, and they mm-hmm. shared your twisted senses of humor or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think as it gets bigger, the great thing is there are more people like that in town. Yeah. So the one thing that's a little bit of a drawback is as it gets bigger, being someone that's been there and watched it grow, you can get a little complacent and think that you know everything. Yeah. I don't need to go over to South End because I did that 10 years ago and there is nothing. But, you know, you can go over there a year, you know, with a space of a year, and it's a whole different place. So I think, you know, as it gets bigger, maybe you have to do a little bit, you have to be more active in searching things out because there's so much more of a palette. And as it gets dispersed, I think you have to be a little bit more conscious. As artists, we have to be more conscious about creating things and kind of doing our work to put out the infrastructure to create those focal points. You know, they don't just naturally exist because this is the only bar in town, so that's where we all go. No. Or this is the only vegetarian spot, everybody comes through there. It's like, there's tons. So now we have to think about it and go, well, if we really want this and we want this to continue, bam, we're going to set up a pillar. And this is, you know, like, be more conscientious about it.
Again, I can't say enough how happy we are at the Sarah Isom Center and with all our partners, Stacker Mountain and Living Music Resource, to have you with us. And we're so glad that you made the journey. And next time you come, you bring Davey with you, and we hope you come back. So. Swerve South is a production of the Sarah Isom Center for Women and Gender Studies, with support from the Southern Documentary Project, music and engineering by Tyler Keith.